Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, here we are, my friends. We have reached the third Saturday in October. And you know what that means in places like Knoxville and Tuscaloosa. It is BetMGMU, live coast to coast on the BetMGM Network with you every weekend. Get you ready for all of the weekend's big matchups. And that's just one, Bama and Tennessee, of five ranked matchups across the college football landscape this week that we've got to get to alongside RJ Choppy and John Martin. I am Chris Mack. Make sure you're following us on all the social media at BetMGM Network. You can watch the show as well. Subscribe to the YouTube page at the BetMGM Network. We'll get you our best bets of the weekend. Maybe some pizza money parlays. We'll sprinkle a little bit of something on those as well. Maybe a peek at the Heisman, but a lot of games to get to. Before, though, we dive into week eight, gentlemen, we have to put week seven to bed, and we've got to put James Franklin to bed. We're going to tuck him in on top of that big fluffy mattress of $50 million that he's going to get paid out over the next several years, as that's the big story. Penn State loses again, and they are the first FBS team in the last 30 years to lose back-to-back games as 20-plus point favorites. Obviously, we talked about the UCLA loss a week ago and Northwestern last weekend. That was enough for Pat Kraft, the AD at Penn State, and the administration, as well as a lot of the fans. It had been past enough to move on from James Franklin. 104-45 overall, 64-36 in the Big Ten after 11 seasons. But we know what that track record was against top 10 teams. It was not good. John, I mentioned this last week, and we brought it up here on the show, that if things did not quickly get better at Penn State, it might mean an exit for James Franklin. As an alum and someone who's up there all the time, the noise was very loud that if he did not finally get over the hump, his job might be on the line. It's still somewhat surprising to see a guy go from playoffs last year, number two team in the country preseason this year, to middle of October, he's out.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that stat about losing two straight games, right, as a 20-plus point favorite. I mean, you lose people. I mean, you lose people. And forget, you know, expectations. Forget the fact that, you know, James Franklin won 70% of his games. Forget the fact that, you know, Penn State was they were good. It was a good program. They were probably you know, a second place in the Big Ten, second tier of national title conversation, you know, program. That's who they were. But you're just hearing more and more come out, you know, about the vibes, about, you know, what people were you know, feeling inside that building. You know, it's stacked up when you don't beat those ranked teams. And you're expected to, you know, at some point. You're expected to break through. And you know, you go 144. You go 104-45. That's great, but if none of the 104 are meaningful wins that help the program break through, you know, people aren't going to want to hear it. So, you know, I think in some ways he was a victim of his own success. You know, he did a really good job there most of the time, but at some point, you know, the expectations ratchet up, and you have to beat the big ones and win the big ones. And for James Franklin, it never happened.
It never happened. And look, this is the blessing and curse of college football being where it is. You know, Bo Schembechler was there for what, 20 years at Michigan. How many titles did he win? Joe Paterno, Penn State. What did he go before he won his first national championship? 16, 18 years? I mean, it's a different era. It just is. Like, the sport is putting so much money into it. NIL, there are no more You got, there's no more where you got to give a guy three recruiting classes. You know, you could turn it around in 1 year with a good NIL season. Kurt Cignetti's showing that in Indiana. So it's the right move and the wrong move. It's terrible for the sport where you have a coach that does nothing but win 10 games, gets run out of town. Right? And that's terrible. But it also signifies the growth of the sport and where it is. It's never been more like the NFL. It continues to be more like the NFL every single day and every single year. And James Franklin is just the latest. And he won't be the last. It'll be Sark. It'll be Dan Lanning. It'll be Josh Heupel. It'll be any of these guys who haven't won a title yet, right? Any of these guys who haven't won a title yet is next. Whether or not they're winning 10 games or not, they're next.
Yeah, this is what happens when you open the field to a lot more teams. You open the idea of the possibility of winning a national championship to a lot more teams, and everybody sees themselves in it as long as they are one of those double-digit win teams more years than not. If you aren't able to get a program to the peak, to the pinnacle, and achieve that ultimate success, then you're right, Choppy. Guys are not going to be kept around. It's not like the Bo Schembechler years where you could go, you know, 8-2 every year, and that's good enough because you're going to be in competition for the Big Ten crown every year or whatever it may be, whatever great coaching name you think of from yesteryear, and what was good enough to maintain their position. And look, the realization was the writing was on the wall in State College amongst many of us Penn State fans, and I think the administration as well, that, like you said, James Franklin was a very good coach, and as John put it, maybe a victim of his own success to a certain extent, in that he was going to be that 10-win guy every year, or have a shot at least 10 wins every year, but he was never going to be the guy that reached the ultimate goal. A very good coach. And I want to be clear, people at Penn State, many of us who are clear thinking anyway, There is a great amount of thanks for what James Franklin did. Bill O'Brien kept the program afloat at a very, very dark time at Penn State. James Franklin came in and got it back, ascended back to national prominence, but he was never going to take the final step of becoming a national champion. And now the question is, John, who is the right person to go to State College and take that program from old 10-2 Jimmy, driver's ed Jimmy, as we used to call it, 10-2, to, yeah, they're a legit national title contender on an annual basis. Matt Rhule is the odds-on favorite, if you search for odds online, 2-1, because he grew up in State College, he went to Penn State, he worked with Pat Kraft at Temple, they are still very close. That makes a ton of sense. It's not going to be Kurt Cignetti. We know that because that man just got paid on Thursday afternoon by Indiana an 8-year contract extension with an average compensation of over $11.5 million a year. So who makes sense now, John, for Penn State?
Yeah, I mean, I think Rhule is just the obvious candidate. And I think this is going to require somebody that really is of the place. And I mean, Penn State is an interesting football program because, I mean, it was basically Joe Paterno. I know we don't really say his name, but, I mean, that's what the program was for decades and decades and decades. And it was great, and it was a contender, and it was really good. And, of course, you know, since then it has been a, you know, I won't say a struggle because James Franklin did get it back, but I just kind of wonder a little bit about, like, what should it be? What should Penn State football be? Should it be a contender every year? I mean, the support is there, the funding is there, but to truly have Penn State in that conversation every year, I think as we are learning, is going to be very difficult. It just is. It's going to be a hard thing to do. And so, while I understand and sympathize with Penn State's decision here to move on from James Franklin because he wasn't breaking through, you know, it's no guarantee the next guy does either. Right. Like that there is a and by the way, it's no guarantee that the next guy wins 10 games a year either. It's no guarantee that the next guy wins 70% of his games. Again, I've been there. It reminds me a little bit of when Tubby Smith got fired by Memphis after two seasons. It was like, how can you possibly fire Tubby Smith after 2 years? Like, you know, he's a Hall of Fame coach. He's won a national. Well, because, you know, you have to placate the fan base and you have to try for more and better. And obviously James Franklin topped out. But I think Rhule makes sense. I just don't. I just don't know that it's going to be as simple as, all right, we made a change, and now all of a sudden Penn State's going to get to where they hope to go. It's going to be very difficult.
Yeah, I think it is going to be difficult. Look, to their west is Ohio State and Michigan and Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. To their south is the SEC. And to their east are absolutely zero Division I football players. Who's coming out of Boston that you want? Who's coming out of Manhattan that's playing college football? Right? Jersey's got a couple of running backs and some wide receivers, right? You're not getting – this is – they're in a tricky spot. I mean, they're in a difficult spot. They are very limited. It's not like – Alabama at least can go south to Florida and just find a million candidates that want to go to school there. It's difficult at Penn State. It just is. They're good, but they are a legendary – they are a nationwide national brand. They're a legendary program, so they're always going to be good. They might have a down year or two here or there. But they're going to have – I mean, they're what? I mean, how many programs can you say are absolutely a more desirable job? Six, eight, ten? They're absolutely more desirable? I mean, not many.
It's why, Choppy, they started over the last 10 to 15 years, mostly under Franklin, to dip as much into Virginia and SEC territory in Florida as they did. And it's worked out great for them. But James Franklin was at the forefront of a lot of that recruiting.
Right, because he was in the SEC. He had some of those recruiting ties. Right. They really need to go after Brian Kelly. That's the guy.
Don't you bite your tongue, RJ Choppy.
He does not fit at the SEC. You know that. He is a northern guy. He's a good coach. He's
I can't
a jerk.
Do that.
We all know
I can't
that.
Do
we
that.
We all know he is. But, you'll be fine. You'll win games.
I can't do that. I'll throw some names out there, and then I want to pivot back to Cignetti briefly for just a couple minutes before we get into the games. For the entertainment vibes alone, I don't know how much they'd have to pay him. Lane Kiffin, assuming that's a possibility, just for the entertainment vibes. Kenny Dillingham.
Lane, by the way, is going to two places. He's going to go to Florida or the New York Giants.
Okay.
That's where Lane's going.
Kenny Dillingham at Arizona State, if you're looking for a guy from another power conference but not one of the big two conferences to maybe make that leap and grow with the program, I like as a name. People have mentioned Brent Key, Manny Diaz, Brian Hartline at Ohio State is a name that's popped up. Then you'd have both of the former Ohio State coordinators in Hartline and Knowles, although it hasn't worked well for Knowles so far this year. And I had an older Penn State alum say this to me the other day. I don't think they would do it because – it would nary make a ripple, let alone a wave across the college football landscape. But a lot of older Penn State people would like it. He's going to be the interim coach the rest of this year. Terry Smith, who has also been at the forefront of a lot of their recruiting efforts in Virginia. He's a Pittsburgh guy and has helped build those secondaries they've had over the last 5 to 10 years, is a name I've heard older Penn State alum mention. I don't think that's realistic, but there are some other names out there other than Matt Rhule. Real quick, because we got like a minute and a half here. Cignetti sticking at Indiana. This is a guy whose contract now takes him out through the age 72. Do we believe it's real, John, with Cignetti, and that this is more than just a 1 or 2 year blip on the radar benefiting, like Choppy mentioned, from the NIL landscape? Can he do this year after year at Indiana?
Yeah, I mean, because I think it'll compel Indiana to keep investing in football. I think it's just kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, they're getting a taste of football success. Seems like they really like it. Seems like they like it enough to make him the third highest paid coach in the country, which is absolutely outrageous to think about. Like, we're talking about football, right? Not basketball. Like, mm-hmm. The third highest coach in the sport is football. It's nuts. So, yeah, I think they're going to get the taste of it. They're on pace for two straight college football playoffs. My guess is, like I said, they really like it, and so they will continue to invest in it. So, yes, I think he's a really good coach. I think he'll continue to have all the resources that he desires.
I agree. I think as long as he is, he's going to age himself out. He's 64 years old. Sooner or later, you slow down. Although he doesn't look 64 and he doesn't act 64.
True.
I mean, think about it. He is young. He is older than Mike McCarthy. He is older than John Harbaugh. He is, I mean, he, for crying out loud, this guy, he is not a young cat. He's less than 10 years younger than Bill Belichick and Nick Saban. But He's done great. He's done a great job. He will be fine.
Less than 10 years ago, Kurt Cignetti was the head coach at Indiana University of Pennsylvania, a Division II school about an hour and a half outside of Pittsburgh. That's been a D2 powerhouse for a long time, but less than 10 years ago, he was in his mid-50s and at a D2 school, and now he's the third highest paid coach in D1 college football.
It's an amazing story.
It's crazy.
An amazing story.
And he's a Western RJ, PA guy to the core,
too. RJ's inspiration. RJ's been thinking about giving up, you know?
He is done. Get into some big SEC matchups, including the third Saturday in October in Tuscaloosa. Five different ranked matchups we got to get to all on the way here on BetMGMU.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Alongside John Martin and RJ Choppy, I'm Chris Mack. This is BetMGMU. Five different ranked matchups to get to this weekend, and we want to dive into each and every one of them, so we're not screwing around. We're going to get right to it. We'll get to the third Saturday in October. Tennessee and Alabama, USC, Notre Dame, LSU, Vandy, and a big one in the Big 12, Utah and BYU. But let's start in Athens, Georgia hosting Ole Miss. It is a 7.5-point spread. Ole Miss comes in undefeated, but other than the LSU win, is there anything really spectacular on their resume? Georgia comes in, I mean, they're the Bulldogs. It's Kirby. It's at home. It's not Alabama that they're playing. 50-2 in their last 52 home games, John. I think Georgia wins this one, but 7.5 in an SEC matchup, especially with Trinidad Chambliss playing the way he has since he took over at quarterback, I got a hard time seeing this one being more than a touchdown game. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I don't think it's probable. If I had to place a bet on this one, I'd take the Rebels in the 7.5, even if I believe Georgia wins it outright.
Yeah, Georgia opened at 6.5, and it's just been Georgia money. You know, I can't say it's like just an avalanche, but enough to push it past a very key number of 7 and now to 7.5, which is another key number. We're learning key numbers today in football. I'm happy to help. Listen, I love the Trinidad Chambliss story as much as anybody else. It's really a great story. The fact that they found this guy at Ferris State, I mean, I don't even know how anybody did that. It's just remarkable. And then he's come in and been awesome. Just unbelievable. Ole Miss hasn't played a road game with Trinidad Chambliss at quarterback. they were at Kentucky with Simmons. He got hurt. Chambliss came in, did a pretty good job. But otherwise, it's been in the friendly confines of Vaught Hemingway there in Oxford. And you're telling me that, you know, he's going to continue to have the same success in his first SEC start ever. You're right, Chris. I mean, 7.5 is getting out there. There's no doubt about that. But I do think Georgia will lean on him. It's hard to bet Georgia given how they looked. But I would just say, hey, you know, it's a big difference playing that Auburn defense, you know, on the road first coming back home against a quarterback making his first SEC road start ever. So I would lean Georgia here. I don't have anything on it. You know, if they wanted to get spicy and take it back to 7, I might flirt with the 7 just to get that push. But I would lean Georgia winning this one.
Man, I had Ole Miss plus 8. You just kind of talked me out of it, and it's too late. It's one of those it's too late for me kind of things. All right.
It's a good number. Eight's a good number, man.
8's a great number, but it's too late because I didn't realize this was Chambliss's first road start. That's a big deal. That's a very big deal. And then I also made this play before Lane Kiffin decided to fat shame Kirby Smart. You know, that's one of the things you got to worry about with Lane Kiffin is you can't bet too early. because he is going to say something stupid throughout the course of the day. This is why you can't trust visor guy. And the problem is both of these coaches are visor guys.
Yeah.
All right. And that's just a problem, you know. But I, you know, initially, like, look, if this was, I was on Ole Miss. I'll stay on there. I'll stay on Ole Miss. I mean, I have them. I'm kind of screwed either way. I think the eight's too much. Georgia has not impressed me. They have not impressed me this year. They beat my team, but I think they got outplayed in that game. That was just a simple fact that we blew it. Our coach decided to go a little conservative. He's a quarterback. Go figure. Should be conservative, but he decided to go conservative and it cost us the game. So I like Ole Miss. Give me Lane Kiffin. Let's knock Georgia out of there. You know, we need Georgia to get out. You get a second loss, knock them out. Maybe Texas could take care of them later on, and then we don't have to worry about them.
On behalf of Kirby Smart and Bulldogs fans everywhere who are looking for the disrespect angle, we'd like to applaud that decision right now. We're clapping. You see that?
Yeah.
I'm clapping, just like Kirby Smart does. Just like that. You can't hear it because my hands aren't actually making contact. I'm calling a timeout. We're going to leave that where it lies. The other big SEC matchup, which I know Choppy is excited for as he's drenched in orange right now. Number 11, Tennessee, going down to Tuscaloosa. Number 6, Alabama Crimson Tide. Another 7.5, 8.5, somewhere in that range, depending on where you find it. Shop around, kids. Matchup on the third Saturday in October. I don't need to say this for Choppy to know it, John. The Vols have not won in Tuscaloosa since 2003. He's plugging his ears right now. On the other side of things, Jam Miller, we'll see what his status is after taking an ugly hit right along the sideline last week, questionable with a concussion. Josh Heupel, 2-2 against Alabama. Kalen DeBoer, as we know, 0-1 against Tennessee, but this one in Alabama, John.
Yeah, I don't have as much of an opinion on the side here, although, I mean, I would be tempted just to take the 8.5 with Tennessee because I think they're going to have success offensively, and that's why I like the over. I like the over at 58.5. I think both teams are going to score. We know that Josh Heupel is going to – there's going to be, like, what, you know, 150 plays in this game. It's going to be something crazy, right? I think this is going to be a back and forth affair. You know, I think these are two, as far as I'm concerned, pretty evenly matched teams. So I think there's a real chance for overtime as well. So I would take the 58.5, kind of sit back and enjoy the fireworks because I think that's what you're going to get in this one.
I like the over two. You know, we don't play well on the road. This is Tennessee under Heupel has not been a very good road team. Save for Vanderbilt last year, which they were down 14 zip to start, and then LSU a couple of years earlier, I think it was Brian Kelly's first year, it has not been a great road football team. That said, you know, I still can't get the stink of Florida State game out of my head when it comes to Alabama. And I know they've beaten some good teams since, and I know they played really good football, and I know Ty Simpson's playing Heisman Trophy level. It's still there. It's still there. What is Missouri? What is Missouri? You know, obviously, like I'm not gonna, you know, there's value on the Tennessee money line. I just would never bet that. That's not a good bet. I think you have maybe a 20% chance of that bet hitting. I think the over's in play. I think that both of these offenses are just humming, and Tennessee's defense stinks.
Yeah, that's a big part of it as well. We'll get to another SEC matchup in just a second, but let's pivot to another rivalry game. USC now in the Big Ten at Notre Dame. Number 20 Trojans visiting the number 13 Fighting Irish. Talk about big totals. This one's sitting up north of 60. We're talking about 61-ish, 61.5 at BetMGM. Makes sense, especially with what USC has done on offense. They're getting 9.5, anywhere from 8.5 to 9.5. Again, shop around, find the best number depending on what you're looking at in this one. The thing that stands out to me, John, you're talking about the second best passing offense if we just go by yardage in the country. USC putting up over 325 passing yards a game against a Notre Dame defense that is ranked 105th against the pass. 8.5, if you can get more, too rich for me. I would not place a money line bet, but USC's defense, in my opinion, is much better than any recent USC defense we've seen. I want to see how CJ Carr handles it. The advantage here, it is in South Bend, but I would definitely take USC in the points if you're giving me more than eight.
Yeah, I mean, I was really surprised with how physical USC was against Michigan last weekend. Just didn't expect it at all. And, you know, maybe if the old fumble doesn't happen, I guess that was on the USC tight end that Michigan forced. That could have been, you know, even worse, right? I have these visions of Lincoln Riley teams in my head, and they very rarely look like that. So, yeah, I mean, this USC team looks different. They look capable. We know the offense is going to be able to score with Lincoln Riley. So, you know, is there a world where Notre Dame can just get whatever they want, you know, in the running game? Obviously, they're with Jeremiah Love, certainly. But I don't know. I think this USC team can travel. I think they can, you know, compete and hang around in this game. We know they can put up points. So I would lean to the points with the dog here. I don't have anything on it, but I would lean towards USC in this one.
I've got USC in this one with the points. You know, I wouldn't take a money line, but it's not a bad USC team. They're not terrible. I still need to see Notre Dame, you know, actually beat a real quality opponent. They've played good teams this year. They just lost to them by the slimmest of margins. You can't penalize them too much for that. But yeah, I think this is going to be one of those games where Notre Dame wins. They did probably win by 7 points. So give me the I'll take the extra 2.5 and I'll go home.
It'll be the first time USC has beaten South Bend, if they can pull it off, in 14 years. Notre Dame 0-2 in their first two games of the year against ranked teams, obviously Miami and Texas A&M early in the season. LSU, number 10 in the country, but another one of those teams. What are they? Getting 2.5 on the road in Nashville against Vandy, 17th-ranked Commodores. Still all about living Pavia Loca. What can Diego Pavia do for you? If he can get loose, especially on the ground, if he can make the right throws, if he can avoid turning the ball over as he did against Alabama, I really like Vandy if I'm laying less than a field goal here, John. I just don't see LSU's offense producing enough. They haven't shown it to us yet this year. I don't know if going into Vanderbilt is – I can't believe I'm saying that sentence. Going into Vanderbilt is the place where they can do it.
Yeah, like how do the kids say it? Hard watch. That's LSU's offense. Hard watch, man.
Hard watch. I swear. Man.
I watched them all night. Against South, my neighbor is a huge LSU fan, and so he got the TVs out, and we watched it outside, and it was great. But the game was terrible, and the offense was awful. I mean, I know there were some goal line turnovers, things like that. I mean, it's hard to square that this Nussmeier kid threw for 4,000 yards last year. Like, what the hell happened? Right. I know people say the oblique injury, things like that. Obviously, they lose Will Campbell to the NFL. Yeah, this feels like a Vandy spot all the way. I think their offense is going to be able to find success. I don't think the LSU offense is going to be able to score. Don't see that many playmakers on that team offensively. It's kind of weird, you know, for a school that's produced some of the best, you know, skill guys in the history of the NFL, for them to have like none right now is kind of weird. But yeah, I would take Vandy at home, no question.
Torn on this one because I'm a big Nussmeier fan. But I'll tell you, Vandy is – they're just a good overall solid team. It's not just Diego Pavia. You know, they've got some players. I love Clark Lee. The only thing that's keeping me from taking Vandy is, you know, road games are difficult. But that is objectively – and I know it's gotten better, but objectively, it is the weakest home field advantage in the conference. I mean, Vandy doesn't really have – diehard football fans. They got a couple of fans, like the parents of the players, but most people in Nashville are probably Kentucky or Tennessee fans. They're not Vandy fans. They've got a handful, but it's a lot like, it reminds me a lot of like, you know, SMU here, right? SMU, most people in DFW are Texas or Texas A&M or Texas Tech or Oklahoma. I mean, you got to get way down the list before you get to SMU. And it's the same, I think it's the same thing in Nashville. So I don't think they have a great home crowd, home field, but I do think that they are going to win this game. I just 2.5, sure, take it. It's so small, the point spread.
All right, one more game I wanted to touch on, and we only got about a minute here, so we can do so quickly and maybe carry it over into the next segment if we have to. But Utah-BYU, massive game at the top of the Big 12. Utah 5-1 with one conference loss. BYU 15th in the country, undefeated at this point. The number that sticks out to me, Devin Dampier continues to produce more yardage on the ground than he does through the air. He literally ran for 120 yards last week and threw for 104 in their win over Arizona State. BYU, I think, more of a complete team at this point. Laying 3.5, I wouldn't lay the points. I think this will be a final possession game. I think it should be a good one. John, in like 30 seconds, you got a read on this?
Yeah, I'd just go Utah. If you can find a juice 3 out there just for the chance to push, I would just bet Utah here. I think they're a little bit more consistent. I like the coach. He's been around for a long time. He's won some big games. So give me Whittingham in a game like this, although it's not a game that I would typically bet. I just never have a great feel for it.
I ain't touching it, man. If I was going to – it's too tricky, these rivalry games. Now, there's no altitude advantage at all, right? A lot of teams going to BYU or Utah, they're going to get screwed by the altitude. That's not going to happen here. I'm staying away. I don't trust either one.
We'll take an updated look at the Heisman market. Carson Beck still at the top. Ty Simpson right there nipping at his heels. And is Fernando Mendoza a legit candidate after Indiana's upset win over Oregon? Plus our best bets, a pizza money parlay thrown in as well. All coming up here on BetMGMU.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Alongside RJ Choppy and John Martin, I'm Chris Mack. You are locked into BetMGMU. Make sure you're following along with BetMGM Network 24/7 on all of our social media channels at BetMGM Network and on YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed. Keep up to date on everything we're putting out there. Just search for the BetMGM Network, obviously live coast to coast every single weekend. Get us in podcast form as well inside your Odyssey app or wherever you get your audio by searching for BetMGMU. Before we get to some of our favorite plays of this weekend, maybe put together some parlays for you as well. An updated look at Heisman odds, guys. Carson Beck still at the top of the list, but just barely ahead of Ty Simpson at BetMGM right now. Carson Beck plus 320, Simpson plus 340, Fernando Mendoza right there as well, a little better than 4-1, plus 430. Then you back off into the mid-teens, Julian Sain, Jeremiah Smith, both from Ohio State at 15-1 at BetMGM. Then you get out to the 20-1s and heavier than that, Marcel Reed, Gunnar Stockton, CJ Carr, Trinidad Chambliss, Dante Moore all the way out at 30-1, as is Haynes King. John, still feels like a wide-open market, although we're now talking about the quarterbacks for the best teams in the country being the ones that are separating themselves from the rest of the pack.
Yeah, I mean, this is the weakest field that I can remember in a while. I mean, maybe weak's not the right word, but it feels weak. Like, I'm looking at these candidates, and I'm just not really moved. You know, like, I would love for a Jeremiah Smith to have – you know, emerged, but, you know, it just really hasn't happened. Like, they haven't been winning in that way, you know. Carson Beck, I get it. Miami's legit. They're a really freaking good team. They can win it all. But I don't really know if that's because Carson Beck. I think he's kind of like along for the ride as opposed to leading it. I mean, they have an offensive line that could give all three of us time, right? Like, it's pretty amazing how that team is built. I think Ty Simpson is probably the best bet right now. I mean, it's an Alabama team that's surging, and they play through him, you know, more so than, you know, a lot of the other teams that you'll see here. And plus, again, they have a chance to, you know, they could win every game the rest of the season. It's certainly, you know, in the realm of possibility. So I think I would, if I had to bet, and I wouldn't because I don't think any of these guys is really making a great case. I would probably bet Ty Simpson here at, 3.5 to 1. But what am I, you know, what am I getting here? I'm not getting much value.
Yeah, the issue with Ty Simpson, and this is where he could propel himself. If they went out, they would have beaten Tennessee this weekend. They would have beaten LSU. They would have beaten Oklahoma. And then whoever they play in the SEC championship game, A&M, Georgia. I mean, he would have, including the Georgia win that they already have, 5 wins over some pretty solid competition. I mean, he might have 5 wins over really ranked teams and then 4 wins over playoff teams. That's possible. It's hard to say no to if they wind up winning out. I think there's going to be some Carson Beck bias, anti-Carson Beck. You know, he's been around so long, and they never gave him credit at Georgia. He broke up with a Cavender twin. I mean, nobody likes that. So you got to go there. I think Mendoza, they don't have a losable game on the schedule. They're going to wind up being – I mean, they might be the number one seed. If they go and they win out and they want to beat Ohio State in the Big Ten title, they're going to be the number one seed. So that's a guy that you can't overlook. I mean, and he's got the best odds of the three.
Yeah, I just – like John mentioned earlier when talking about Simpson and Beck and Mendoza's in that crowd too. I don't know if the return's worth it at this point. If you haven't placed your Heisman bet at this point and you're looking for something with a greater return on your investment, none of these are jumping off the page at you. Like Dante Moore may have before last weekend. I mean, maybe if you believe in an A&M run that isn't totally driven around defense, Marcel Reed at 20-1 is still a name that jumps out because they've kind of somehow flown under the radar, the Aggies, to this point. But there's not a lot of names. I think John's right. This is weak, maybe isn't the right word, but just not all that attractive Heisman field. In recent memory. So especially if you're looking for a name farther down the board that could realistically have a shot, maybe a Gunnar Stockton at like 25-1 if you think Georgia's got a run in them. But again, we're talking about the Heisman. It's getting voted on before the playoffs start. So you take that out of the equation to a certain extent. Who's going to, like you said, Choppy, who's going to run the table the rest of the way? I think Mendoza isn't a bad look if you believe Indiana can get past Ohio State. But again, we're talking about a game that I don't even know if it's going to be played before most of the Heisman votes are cast, right? So you just look at what's on the table as far as the rest of the regular season and who can have the most success and does anybody step out. I tend to go back to Beck if we're talking about people we actually expect to win the award, but at 3-1, 4-1, I don't know if that bet is worth it. It would have to be something that I made months ago. The problem is all the names that we talked about way back in July and August, John, Nussmeier, Aller was talked about, Arch Manning, they're all out the window. None of those guys is winning the Heisman now. Aller's not even going to play the rest of the year. He's not going to play college football again, which is what's blown this thing wide open.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts. It's pretty nuts to think about just all the, you know, I mean, I think in the case of Arch, it's been more, you know, maybe our expectations were the problem there. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, he hasn't been anywhere close to what we expected. Lenore Sellers is struggling. DJ Lagway, you know, where's that step? I mean, I guess it's been better the last couple of weeks since he got Wilson in there. But, you know, I expected more from him. Aller obviously is gone. So yeah, it's been that's exactly right. That's a great call, Chris, because you expected like all four of those guys to probably be at the top of this thing. And so now that they're all like safely out, it's kind of just made this, Mad Max field.
It's like Lord of the Flies. There's just nobody left to run the thing and nobody's really in charge of the Heisman race right now. I think, again, it's why Beck makes a ton of sense, but I don't know if it makes sense betting wise right now as far as someone who could win the Heisman as we're now looking at more than halfway through the regular season. All right, let's get to some of our best bets. We'll put some parlays together as well, see what we cook up for this weekend around college football. I've got, once again, way too many bets written down. I'll get to mine in a minute. But, John, what do you got? What do you like the most this weekend?
I'm going to be a homer. I like Memphis minus 21.5 against UAB. I know that UAB fired, you know, Trent Dilfer, and that's always a little bit of a risk betting into a team or against a team that, you know, just fired their head coach. But, like, this is not a, just a coaching issue. This is a talent issue. UAB has no money. They have no NIL money. I don't really know what they're doing. They should have fired Trent Dilfer after last season. Like, what did they need to see or think they would see to justify giving him another year? At any rate, while I think UAB will look better because it's impossible to look worse, Memphis is going to run all over these cats. I mean, they have the they have an improved defense. It's number 11 in defensive stop rate, Memphis does. So I just think Memphis, even with the new coach bump here at UAB, like, what are you hoping to get from UAB? Like 24? I mean, I think Memphis can hang 50 plus on this team. They did last year. I suspect they'll be able to do it again.
Choppy, you got a favorite play or a part? I know you got a pizza money parlay, but what's your favorite play?
A pizza money, baby. Good luck finding one of these games. All right, I already said I have Ole Miss plus the 8 points. I got it at 7.5 now. I got the USC. I got USC plus 10. It's down to 9.5. I'm just moving lines, baby. But then the third game of this, good luck finding it. It's over 54.5, Montana against Sacred Heart. Take the over 54.5. I don't even know what Sacred Heart's mascot is. I think it's are they the peacocks or something like that? I don't know.
Not Sacred Heart, but was some kind of knight or something. They're the pioneers. Yeah, I'm sorry. Like, they're the pioneers.
Pioneers. Montana, the Grizzlies, right? Montana, Sacred Heart, over 54.5. There's your parlay.
Grizzlies probably messed up a lot of pioneers back in the day, like back in the Oregon Trail day, you know?
Ooh,
especially dysentery. Out there in Montana.
Dysentery was big.
You have cholera. Would you like to trade some wagon wheels for some antibiotics? That is a hell of a parlay, Choppy. If you want to boost your parlay, BetMGM, the place to do it, no matter where the college football action is, nothing like getting in the game and leveling up your next parlay. You can use a parlay boost token to boost your potential payout from a winning parlay inside the BetMGM app right now. Download it if for some god-awful reason you haven't yet, and use that parlay boost token to level up your winnings this weekend. So I've got a number of games that I've written down, scratched some of them off, circled some of them that I believe in a little bit more. Missouri at Auburn, either money line or laying 1.5. I like Missouri to bounce back, even if it's on the road in the SEC. I don't believe in Auburn. I think that may have been proven out over the last week or two. So Missouri laying 1.5 is one I would keep an eye on if you're trying to put together a parlay. Georgia Tech, even money on the money line at Duke. I know Duke's offense is producing to this point. Manny Diaz has things clicking, and this is a road game in the SEC. I'm sorry, though. Haynes King. That's all I got to say. Haynes King, Georgia Tech on the money line at Duke. The ones I actually will be putting together as a parlay, I like both the Texas schools this weekend, A&M and the Longhorns, both on the road in the SEC. A&M laying 7.5 at Arkansas. Yes, please. Texas laying a bigger number, 12.5 at Kentucky, but if you've watched the Kentucky Wildcats attempt to play something resembling football this year, you're probably comfortable laying less than 2 touchdowns there on the road at Lexington with the Longhorns. We mentioned already USC against Notre Dame. I like the Trojans, especially with that number all the way out to 9.5 now. I like USC, maybe not to win outright, but certainly to keep it close and maybe pull off the upset against Notre Dame in South Bend. And one final one I got to throw in there, Penn State at Kinnick at night. No, I'm not betting a side in this one. Are you kidding me? They got Otis Spunkmeyer as their quarterback now, Ethan Grunkmeyer. Penn State Iowa total is all the way up into the 40s now, kids. 40.5. Hammer the under. Penn State Iowa Saturday night at Kinnick in primetime. Just don't make yourself or your kids watch it. That's not going to be real football. Thanks to John Martin. Thanks to RJ Choppy. Thanks to our producer, Zach Krall. Thanks to all of you for joining us. Make sure you're following along and subscribed wherever you get your podcast to BetMGMU. And we'll do it again next week right here on the BetMGM Network.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's
outside
not,
of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.